Morning. May we start? And welcome the acting SARS commissioner and his colleagues. This being our first engagement, I think it will be in order for us to know each other. For you to know us. So we'll hand over to you to introduce yourself and National Treasury people to introduce themselves as well, and for comrades this side to introduce themselves, so at least you know who you're dealing with. Yeah.
Chair, thank you very much for the welcome, and just to say it's my first engagement in this capacity, and thank you that we could be here, and we look forward to the engagement. I'm going to ask my two colleagues specifically to introduce themselves, but I've got to my left my acting Chief Financial Officer, and to the right I've got my Chief Officer of Governance, International Relations, Strategy and Communication, but I'll ask them to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Well, maybe if you could introduce yourself first.
I'm Mark Kingham. I'm the Acting Commissioner for the South African Revenue Service.
I'm Johnston Makhobo. I'm the Acting Chief Officer for Finance.
And I'm Hlengani Mathebula. I'm the Chief Officer for Governance, International Relations, Strategy and Communication.
Good morning, Zoli Shitangana from National Treasury.
Morning, I'm Sisi Kondote from National Treasury.
Good morning, my name is Amo Bubega from the Office of the Auditor General.
Right, thanks, comrades. We introduce ourselves.
Good morning, I'm Zoli Kube, member of the committee.
Good morning, Thabelo Chilwane, member of the committee.
Good morning, Thabisen Kuno, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. Tim Bradisett, proud member of the committee from the great province of KZN.
David Ross, member of the committee.
Thank you. Dumela Mdula Stulo, Kisaki Kekana.
Good morning, my name is Vincent Smith.
Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. Acting Commissioner, we once again would like to welcome you and your team. I can assure you that we all pay our taxes here and submit our returns timeously. We are all tax compliant. So we talk to you with an absolute sense of confidence that there will be no comebacks. So the issues that we have asked you to appear before us are very straightforward. They're issues that deal with expansions and deviations. We have been concerned as a committee about the prevalence of this practice, which we were worried that it might actually be normalizing what is supposed to be something that should be used in exceptional circumstances. It becomes a new normal. And to that extent, we have asked National Treasury to give us quarterly briefings on this. And when we looked at the figures, SARS figures were really shooting out of the roof. And that is why we have said, no, come talk to us, explain to us, and give us a sense that all what you did was absolutely necessary. There was no abuse of the system. Now, I've gone through your presentation, and I hope, Mr. Chitangano, you have a copy of the SARS presentation, because on slide 14, where they make general recommendations, I think they've made very interesting recommendations for an entity, because they are making recommendations that seek to actually tighten the process so as to close the loopholes that might be there. I found that very courageous coming from you when others actually want the system to be opened even more so they can have more discretion. I found that very interesting personally. That's why I'm drawing Mr. Chitangano's attention to those recommendations. Now, what we're going to do, Acting Commissioner, I will hand over to Comrade Vincent Smith. Like I said, we have seen your presentation, we have all the documentation, your correspondence between yourselves and National Treasury, we have them. And as a matter of rule in this committee, we read with a fine comb. So we've gone through this. I've gone through them even this morning. I came early. I was sitting in my office going through them. So that will make our job much easier, because then comrades will raise a few areas for clarification, and if we're done early, we all have an early morning, and you can go back and continue collecting taxes. And we can wait for our afternoon session with the public works. But let me hand over to Comrade Smith. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you, Chair. Before I start, Chair, just to make sure that we're on the same page, this SARS deviations quarter 4 2017, this is a SARS document. The one that has quarter 4, quarter 3, quarter 2, and quarter 1, is that a SARS document? No?
Chair, I don't think that is a SARS document. I don't know if Treasury can comment.
It's a Treasury document. Okay, fine. I just wanted to check that. That's fine. All right. Just to indicate, Chair, I was asking that question because this document says supported, conditionally supported, not supported, and so on. I just want clarity. Where it says not supported, whoever the author is of this document, where it says not supported, does that mean that we didn't go ahead with the process, or did we go ahead with the process? I'm just trying to understand that.
Chair, through you, whenever we don't get support, we halt the process and seek other means of going through either an engagement with Treasury, where we feel that they might have not understood where we were coming from, but where you see not supported, we would have not gone through with
right.
That particular transaction. Okay?
All right. Okay. Let us then start, Chair, with, on this document, I'm hoping members have got this one. Our members have got this one. It says, yeah, that one. If we go to
item 7 on quarter 4. So 7 off the top. It says Eskom Academy of Learning. National Treasury didn't support your request for deviation. You asked for a deviation because you said that that school, I'm paraphrasing it, that Eskom has got the necessary infrastructure and so on, and you wanted a deviation. Treasury, in their letter to you on the 26th, said National Treasury does not support the extension. Your institution is advised to test the market. Can I get a sense of what has happened now? Are you still there at Eskom, or what has happened to that process?
Through you, Chair, so there would have been an initial phase, what we call phase one, where we went through a transaction that National Treasury had approved. And we had always understood that we will then go through a phase two, because we're given just a limited space. So the submission you are seeing here there was to go for phase two. So when Treasury did not allow us to do that and asked us to test the market, the team is actually in the process of preparing that work to actually see how the market can be tested. I must say that we had opted to go to Eskom firstly on the basis of GIAMA, as well as the fact that they are a state-owned entity, and they appeared to have had capacity at the time to be able to accommodate us as well as their own requirements. So when we were asked to test the market, we did not go ahead with that transaction with Eskom. Right. So as things stand now, we have employees that are located at Eskom Academy of Learning as a result of the phase one transaction, right. But we cannot blow it further to go to phase two, okay. As we have requested.
Okay. So in other words, there's no cost incurred. You are asking for 10 million rand over 10 years. That is still testing the market. That's what you're saying to us. Okay. All right. Can I go to the next one then, Chair? It's, as I understand it, and had conditional support, so I suppose you've done it. You have learned, you have senior managers and executive managers that you want to capacitate. You send them to GIBS and you send them to some other school. I just need to understand, first of all, why do you think that Harvard or one of those are the only ones that can teach your CEO level and not any other business school? That's what you said here, and then with GIBS you had a similar type of thing. I am struggling to understand that there's no institution in South Africa that can teach MBA type of skills, that you have to go, and I'll give you the figures if you need the skills. So first of all is, why do you do that? The second question that I'm asking, all over in the country, in the world, I think, if I want to go and improve myself, I apply in my capacity. And my institution then either refunds me if I pass or whatever. Why is it necessary for you guys to pay up front or for you to pay? So those are the two questions. Why are you paying exorbitant amounts of money without any tender? Because these guys don't go out on tender. So you just go and pay for GIBS, you go and pay for Harvard. And secondly, shouldn't it be that I apply my personal capacity and get refunded or subsidized or something like that? Thanks.
Okay. So that those two transactions, we eventually did not go through with them. The decision that SARS had decided to undertake in the development of resources was to try and have customized training that will bring in the tax element into the development of various levels of leadership. So there was one for operational managers, there's one for senior managers, one for executive managers, and one for EXCO, as well as women, specifically women in the organization. But we wanted to sort of customize the training intervention so that we're able to bring organization-specific elements. So when we had gone out eventually on tender, because for the others that we went out on tender, the institutions were allowed to customize 30% of the program that they already had to filter in some specific strategic outcomes that we wanted people to be trained on. I must state that our employees have got a study aid program that they are free to go on, but we felt it was important as part of capacitating in a manner that is aligned with our strategic outcomes, because we felt that, yes, some of the colleagues might have external MBAs, but we wanted programs at different NQF levels that specifically addresses some of the challenges in the organization. For instance, Chair, what would happen in those programs that are customized? There would be specific problems within the organizations that employees are given as case studies to then work through action learning so that they're able to bring solutions working through the qualification program to then capacitate the solution of the problems that are in the organization. Thing.
Okay. Can I just ask a question then? My understanding is that you're saying you didn't go through with them. If you didn't go through with them and you had identified the problem in the first instance to ask for this money, how have you resolved that problem now? What have you done now that you've not gone through the Gibbs and the Harvard? What are you doing? How did you resolve it? Or has the problem disappeared?
So the problem has not disappeared. So we are taking it in phases. So we are taking the lower level of management, middle, senior, the executive, which would have been the beneficiary of this program. We have decided to put on ice at this point in time whilst we find ways of addressing this. What normally becomes a challenge with this type of specific type transactions for development is that these entities normally don't respond to tenders. If you look even at the response for the lower level of management programs, we had to have really a very open, with a number of engagement sessions, open sessions, to ensure that we heighten response. So we've not gone on with it, but we are looking from a procurement point of view, what method of strategizing do we then utilize whilst we take the critical mess through the ones that we went out on open tender on. So I can give assurance to this house that for the lower management, middle and senior management, we went out on an open tender for those programs, and people are currently being trained for those specific programs. Thank you.
I'm going through the odd ones. We'll get to where you've got your major ones. Can I just deal with the last one? And that, honourable members, for your purposes, is quarter one, number four, the one that says Vodacom and Telkom. In reading yesterday or last night in preparing, you went to Treasury and you asked for a 3-month extension for the Vodacom contract. 19 million rand for 3 months. That's what you asked for. 1st of July to the 7th of September. 3 months, 19 million rand for the voice contracts. And your rationale was, well, these guys have been doing it in the past, so we want to give it to them. Are we together? Vodacom. Treasury's letter was the 26th of June 2017, and you guys would have probably asked for it. In fact, SAR's letter, if I find the date, it doesn't have a date, but there's a SAR's letter from the chief procurement. Are you together with us? Okay.
Chair, I'm aware of the transaction. Okay. I'm looking through my letters.
All right.
So that I can speak.
If you've got the transaction, it's fine. I want to understand why did you think that you need a deviation for a Vodacom transaction? Now, somewhere in your letter that the chair was praising you on,
You said that it's only for exceptions, emergencies, open tender, and so on. I'm struggling to understand why it would be an emergency. Don't go to the market for voice when we've got so many of them in the country. That's the first. And the second, 19 million rand for 3 months works to, I don't know, about 8 million rand a month. Who's the beneficiary of 8 million rand a month at SARS? Is it senior management, or who's benefiting from 8 million rand a month? And the final point on that one, it was supposed to be for 3 months up to September. Who is currently providing that service to you now? Because that Vodacom one was, you asked for permission for 3 months. What is happening now? 3 months has expired. For the three questions, why do you need a deviation? Secondly, how do you justify 19 million for 3 months? Who's benefiting from that 19 million? Is it senior management? Is everybody getting a cell phone allowance? And then the third one is, what is happening currently? Because that was only for 3 months, which should have expired in 2017, September the 7th. Yeah, 7th of September.
Chair, if I may respond to the middle question about who has cell phones. Not everybody has got cell phones. It depends totally on an operational need for a cell phone device. It has to be motivated and approved. So it's not everybody that has a SARS cell phone device. But then I'll see if I can just take it further.
Okay, on the Vodacom matter, I'm just orientating myself because we have two transactions with Vodacom. We've got one for that falls under the DVRS tender, data voice. SMSs and related services. But I see what Solly has just given me is the one on voice. So we were waiting for RT15. National Treasury had gone out on a voice contract. So we did not want to expand. In fact, we were told not to renew further until that is closed. So we wanted to allow ourselves a short space of time to then ensure that once that RT15 is closed, we can then get into participating through that. So to answer the question clinically, why did we just raise it for 3 months? It was to ensure that when the RT15 that National Treasury was busy negotiating with Vodacom and others, I believe, we would then be ready to participate. So which we have, to answer your question, we have since moved into that National Treasury transversal contract with Vodacom, and I think we are a second month into that particular contract. Yesterday we had a first engagement to gauge how far we are going in terms of the issues. And I must state that we have seen around 40% cost reduction since we've gotten into, for the first 2 months, cost reduction since we've gotten into that RT15 arrangement. Of course, it has got its own teething problems. What we normally do, right, when we go to National Treasury for values, we base those values that we are asking for on estimates. And you find in the main that as we execute that contract, we don't necessarily execute it on the basis of the 19. So what would have happened is we would have said, let's estimate how much it would be. And if it happens that we fall within that, we don't have to go back. If we exceed that, we don't have to go back to National Treasury to ask for more. So answer the question clearly. RT15, we were waiting for it. We extended for 3 months, and we have since moved to RT15, and we have seen some value onto it. The 19 million was an estimate that we had put through. Thank you. That's fine.
You asked for 57 million for 10 years for a building, I think it was in vereniging van Redie Pijn. And this goes across with all your buildings. 10 years extension, 57 million rand, redefined, Blue Crest, the same type of thing. I think it's here in the Western Cape. And I think there's one in Johannesburg, the City Deep building and so on. You know, my difficulty with this, and I hear your argument, Chair, that we need to be located where the people can get hold of us. But if you take these buildings, you're in them for 10 years, you ask for another 10-year extension type of thing. When are you ever going to get out of that place? Because in the Vereniging one, for instance, you said you've gone to the market, there's only two buildings, and one has already been taken. So does that mean that for the next 100 years, SARS is going to lease buildings in Vereniging? I'm looking at the trend, because this is the trend across, even if it's the one in Bloemfontein, in Bellville. I do think that you need to, and you have said, to preempt what you're going to say to me, you have said that your first port of call is public works. But we have to find a solution to this thing. Do you guys agree? Can you talk to that?
Chair, through you, indeed we believe that we should look at some way of shifting. We've had EXCO approve a corporate real estate strategy, which seeks in the main to move from leased to owned in some instances. If financials don't allow, because it would be a huge investment undertaking, to leverage of National Department of Public Works, we must also state that. So we've seen the trend. We are indeed in some instances concerned. In the matter of Vereniging, we've actually since then went and did a specific market intelligence analysis to see whether there is any planned development that could be coming in that particular area. So it becomes sort of a dichotomy. Do you have funds to be able to build your own branches? And under the current environment, I only have 2.7 billion to spend for the whole of SARS in terms of external spend. And I'm not able at this point in time, as an organization, we are not able to commit to building branches. We've had an engagement with Department of Public Works last week where they are coming up with ways and means in which we can be able to collaborate with them in as far as leases are concerned. And I believe that that will bring more transparency into the process and ensure that we collaborate as much as possible. It is a challenge in some environments because to find the space is quite a challenge. I must give the committee assurance that we've got tools such as the roads report that we utilize. So every time we engage a service provider, whether it be a new transaction or we are expanding, we do check whether there is still value for money in terms of the compatible rates that are being charged in the vicinity of that particular area, so that we from a rand per square meter point of view, we can put our hands in heart and say we have done what is best for the fiscus. It is indeed, some of our leases are quite lengthy, and whenever there is opportunities, there's instances where we've moved with the taxpayer. So when the taxpayers are moving closer to the malls, we have open branches in the malls. Because our analysis tells us that in that particular geography, that's what is happening. But in some instances, it has become quite challenging to find new locations and move to those particular locations. Then,
all right. Before I give my colleagues, and I'm struggling to understand it, I'd like you to first explain what is the actual service. This is the multi-choice contract, where you're asking for multi-choice DSTV commercial premium subscriptions. So first of all, if you could explain that to me. What is this DST subscriptions? And then the second point, And then the second point is, the reason you give for asking for this, and I want to read it for you, the reason for not inviting competitive bids is considered to be an exceptional one due to the fact that multi-choice holds, and this is the interesting part, I'm not sure if you're following, multi-choice holds a competitive advantage within the subscription broadcasting market. First of all, you must explain that to me. Secondly, and it was supported by Treasury, you know, if we go on the logic that we're not going to offer competitive bids because somebody in the market holds the competitive advantage, we're never going to break monopolies in this country. We're never going to break monopolies in this country. Because it doesn't matter which industry chair, I'll find somebody who has the competitive advantage. So do we just go and buy Albany bread because it's got the competitive advantage and not buy bread from Gagana Bakery? Because that's the logic that you've used, and I'm surprised that Treasury has supported it. So if you could explain to me, first of all, what is the service? And secondly, do you agree with me that it can't be that in future we go for it because it has a competitive advantage if we want to break the stranglehold of monopolies in the country? Thanks, Chair.
I'll address the last question. I think my team probably framed this incorrectly. Indeed, we cannot utilize competitive advantage as means of deviating and expanding. It can't be, and I would like to apologize on behalf of my team. It probably should have been phrased to say it falls within the impracticality part of the provisions of Instruction Note Number 3.
Well,
of
I don't think impracticality would apply, because you're saying competitive advantage, which means you have other role players, but you feel this one is streets ahead of the rest. So let's just focus on them. And that's why he's talking about the monopolies.
Sure.
So I think, well, I'm glad that you acknowledge that part. It's a substantive oversight, because it talks to our outlook and how we approach and understand the various role players in society or in the economy. But anyway, let's talk to the first part. What service were meant to be provided?
Okay, so this is subscription to a bouquet of business bouquet for the various branches that we have, as well as some of our corporate offices. It allows for you to flight material whilst people are in queues, and also it allows for some of our communications team to track what is happening in the news environment, both locally and globally, to then allow them to pick up either Bloomberg, if it's Bloomberg, or whoever is making certain pieces of information available in the domain. We've since, the reason why this came through, when I came into the organization, I wanted to consolidate. There was a number of these different individual transactions that were happening all over. So I decided to approach the service provider to say, can we consolidate into one, create visibility, and then we can deal in terms of lessening who's got what. So it was the first step towards creating the visibility about 6, if not 12 months ago. So to consolidate everything, see who's got what. We are now working through saying there are people that shouldn't be having this service, and therefore we throw off certain people, certain users as we go along. So some people are already not subscribers anymore because we asked, well, how did you land here? And we continue to do that, Honorable Smith, to try and make sure that, I know it sounds small, it sounds like two million odd, it sounds small, but ultimately, if we are short of money in the organization, it all tallies up. So we did, yes, deviate, the view was to say, let's create visibility, let's agree a group deal, and then those that are not supposed to be having that service, we are, as we go on, terminating them.
Okay.
Just a question, Chair. I'm still struggling. When you say the group deal, are you saying this is a, I don't know what you call it, an intercom type of service? Is it a service in your organization? Because if you're saying let me put it differently, who's the target market? If the target market is South Africa broadly, I don't understand why you'd go to PlayStation instead of going to SABC 1 and SABC, if your market is South Africans generally, then it doesn't make sense to go to a PlayStation. If your target market is you're doing it for people in the office, then there's a different story. So I'm trying to understand who is your target market, and that's besides the monopoly that I'm talking about. If the target market is broader South Africa, then I think you got it all wrong, because DSTV is not best place to reach South Africans, certainly the poor South Africans.
So Honorable Smith, the first part is that there was an attempt at consolidating. I think let's try and pass that first. Is that you had almost every executive or a group executive would utilize their budget in their cost center to enter into a subscription of some sort. And this created disparities in the organization, because one will have a business premium a package, the other one will have a very different a package. What we then did was to say, well, stop the entire thing and then consolidate it into one a package, which will be a business package, and you will have then to explain why this business package does not address your needs. So what would those needs be? You will need a business. So let me just not necessarily say business. Let me say you will need a CNA, CNBC Africa. You will need ENCA. You will need all those services that you will need. And if you say no, I need something else. I need Al Jazeera. And we think it's outside that, we will then have to make a case why you think in the business of SaaS that specific thing would be required. That's the first part. So we had to then consolidate. Secondly, in terms of the audience will firstly be your various SaaS offices, which will include the port of entries and the branches, and then head office. Then there's going to be the third element, which is an ability to be able to broadcast at once a messaging to our staff instead of having having to dispatch teams to travel across the country, which will result in certain people receiving the message much more later than the others in the event where there is a particular message that needs to be broadcasted. The third element is the one that is related to
will be the fourth element.
Fourth element. The fourth element will have to relate to messages that we will want taxpayers to be able to be educated on around what we'll be doing. So let's take tax seasons for instance. If we're launching tax seasons and want that our taxpayers on the lines, some that may have not been required to be on the lines to know that they are not supposed to be on the line. Those who are supposed to be, if filing online, they should be able to go and file online. So it has a broader means to be able to reach there. It's not only about ensuring that what people are watching soapies and all that. In fact, some of those channels are restricted in that sense.
So this is my final one, and I'll wrap up, Chair. So my understanding is this is, in the main, an internal communication tool within SaaS, because you're saying to me, instead of sending an SMS to everybody, you can send out a message. It goes to SaaS employees across the country. That's the one. And the second one is if I'm in your queue and I look up on the screen, you'll say to me, if I'm coming for this product, you don't have to stand in this queue, go to somewhere else. Is that what it is it all about?
So primarily it will be DSTV at subscriptions, but in those screens you'll then be able to do exactly that one of those things.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks, comrades. Any follow-up questions before we move to Honorable Brothers? Just on the part that Comrade Vincent was dealing with. Ross, we are not about to end the session, but...
No, I was an early bird this morning, and so are you, Chair. Thank you for allowing me so early in the session. Just to make a few remarks with regards to the Honourable Smith's questions, which was very helpful. Chairperson, yes, on the first, on deviations number 7, on my documents it states supported. Should it not be conditional supported, because there's still the market to be tested? Could we ask for a correction on that one? It's just a technicality. And then just my views in terms of the business school, Harvard Business Schools, and the qualifications and the costs incurred. I think it's for 12 persons, and then it's just over 6 million. Is it correct? For 2 years, if I read it correctly. I thought the cost would be much higher. I have family members that wants to study at Harvard, so well-versed in terms of the cost. I think this, the cost for 12 persons seems to be reasonable, but yes, the question. When people do achieve the Harvard qualification or a London Business School qualification, what is the chances of retaining the skills for many years? Because, you know, a very lucrative office comes in from the private sector, and I think that's a risk. That's why I thought the Honourable Smith had a very good point in raising this issue. It's about spending and then losing the cost, losing to private enterprise. And then just with regards to your collaboration with Public Works in terms of ownership versus leasing. Ownership is an expensive issue. It could be triple the cost of leases. But certainly I think the point is made that there should be a thorough analysis in terms of lease cost in terms of competitive bidding. That I agree on. And then just in terms of state-owned, the drain on the fiscus, what we currently see in the country is that many of the state-owned the buildings are not paying their dues to municipalities, and that is a problem. They don't pay for bulk supply services, the buildings are lapidated, and it's a huge cost in maintaining. So I prefer the lease option, but I'd like to have your views in terms of a cost analysis, because you base it on a Röder report. But is there not, these issues in terms of cost will differ year on year, and I think we would like to have analysis on a yearly basis in terms of the cost versus ownership, and then internal also in terms of costs for leases in terms of competitive bidding in the lease process. Thank you.
Chair, if I may, through you, just respond firstly to the issue of the Röder report. That is updated continually. So it's not a once-off, and it is an updated report monthly, in fact, I'm being told. I think the issue of ownership versus lease is an ongoing challenge to know what is best. And we have been doing certain evaluations in terms of our corporate real estate, specifically within our head office environment. And there is a turning point where ownership becomes more effective, and their payback over a five-year period, if it goes longer than that, obviously it does get more beneficial. But obviously you've got to maintain the buildings, and I understand the challenges with regards to that. On our watch here, we will make sure we're paying our rates and taxes. I want to assure the Honourable Member that we are doing what is right in terms of that. In terms of the Harvard cost and whether 12 million is reasonable for that number, I'm not too aware of what the costs would be. But I do want to deal with the issue, which is an important issue for me, is contractually binding people where we do send them on courses, and we do. And I'll give an example, even in terms of the lower courses which the Honourable Smith raised a few minutes ago, the internal courses via certain service providers, they are bound, and when they terminate, there's a payback clause in terms of the cost involved if they terminate employment. So we do bind them, but it's never indefinite. So you do find these days that skills are very mobile, and we need to be aware of that, but we do bind people when we do invest into their lives.
All right, let's take a bite on this Harvard thing, Honorable Ross. So the idea was for 12 people, and I agree with you totally in respect of the cost. It is slightly understated, and the reasons for understating stated for it being understated is because it wasn't that those 12 people will certainly go to Harvard at once. If it is otherwise going to go to Harvard, I'm a Harvard product, and I can tell you that I know what the cost is, and I'm still at the institution. So this is much more tailored for the level of the executives, so your chief officers and all that, because they what you are looking for there is not an MBA, nor are you looking for a doctorate. You are looking for a specific intervention around the specific skills you'll be looking for at an individual that will be running a particular division and all that in respect of a chief officer. Now, we have had a bit of a churn in terms of turnover in terms of the chief officers in the organization, and that has not allowed us to be able to put that into practice. But it is a program of enhancing skills that is crucial to ensure that the people that are heading this institution continues to be competitive, continues to learn the best there is in the tax or revenue industry.
Right, Comrade Sukuno.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question also is a follow-up question on the what Comrade Vincent started with earlier on. And the way you responded actually made me want to ask a question. That you already have a study aid for employees of SAF. How much have you budgeted for that as a study aid? Have you planned that if you say that for lower levels this is what they are going to do, this is part of their benefits, middle management, this is their benefits, and the senior management of the executive, this is their benefits. How much have you budgeted for their studies?
Can I get it? But maybe to explain, Chair, the process. So people have to apply for their study aid.
No. Do you have the figures of the budget?
I've got it. I'll just pick it up. Maybe we can move to the next question while I start looking for it.
Yeah, sure. I want us to move to the next question in the absence.
The reason why I was asking that, Chairperson, this is what we are trying to do as SCOPA, to make sure that we minimize deviations and expulsions as much as possible. Because according to us, you heard what the Chairperson said when he started. It's poor planning. If you do not plan properly, you will have all these expansions and deviations. And some of them, they're not done because there's an emergency. And we end up having monopolies, and then there's no competitive, there's no transparency, there's no fairness at all, which is what the Constitution is talking about. And that's why we want to make sure that if you don't do that at all, that's why I was asking Chairperson, how much did you budget for BASAF? Because if you have budgeted for them, you wouldn't want to have extra money. But again, Chairperson, when we are still there, we have institutions of learning in South Africa. And VET has got all these courses that you want to do. But if executive wants to study in Harvard, it's more of a privilege. You know, it's not a necessity. If they want to do it, they can do it on their own. They are getting more salaries. Why can't they do that from their own salaries and apply to Harvard? I really don't get that at all. Because, there's a lot of cost to a distance learning. I know it's very costly. My question is that why should the South Africans, with their taxpaying money, pay for you to as executive when you are getting enough salaries to go and study in Harvard? I know that you said there are courses, but if you, like what the Treasury has said, if you had tested the market in South Africa, I'm telling you, those courses, South Africa is not the way it used to be. A lot of things have changed. I'm telling you now that those courses, you'll find them in South Africa if you test the market.
I thought you would take that as a bad course. Because do you have a figure for the budget? Because I think that is what you need to respond. Otherwise, the other point that she's raising, take it as food for thought.
Thank you. When we haven't got the budget yet, we'll get it. We'll come down.
All right. We will get the budget. Maybe in the meantime, let's go to our proud member of the committee from KZN.
No. KwaZulu-Natal. Originally Gauteng. Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I certainly come here as a person today with clean hands because I've paid all my tax, but I can say that that is not the case with SARS, because they owe me a substantial amount of money at the moment. I'm still waiting for my refund. Anyway, so as usual, I like to have them on the back foot, which is good. Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I've been tasked with looking at expansions, and that was the really thick section of the of the bundle that we were given. So I'd like to just work through, there is an index here, colleagues will have it. I'm going to do it a bit back to front. So I'll start with expansions quarter four, which is 2017-2018, 1 April 2017, 30 June 2017. I'm sure everybody can follow me from there. So, Acting Commissioner, if we can just start there. I'm going to go through in the schedule. I just want to focus on the not supported, just so we can get clarity on those, and then we'll go through to. I'm not going to focus on the supported because I trust that Sully and his team from Treasury know what they're doing. So if they support it, we are pretty much happy because there's just so much to handle. So let's look at the not supported and the conditional supported. So starting at the top, not supported additional IBM hardware, software, and service solutions. For the sake of my colleagues, that big, thick section you were given, which had a big, heavy-duty clip on it, yeah, we started page one of the actual documents. So underneath that index, you'll see that we start with the actual documents. So this related to expansion on the IBM contract. Are you with me? Okay, sorry, I know it's a lot of paperwork. So expansion on the IBM contract. What I'm concerned about here is that National Treasury, you had an estimated amount of 617.7 million rand for this particular contract. There was you asked for an expansion of 484 million, which is quite a large expansion. 78%, and Treasury turned it down. Now, this is one of my bugbears, especially when it comes to licensing and all that sort of thing. I hate these licensing in perpetuity issues where, you know, IT guys get hold of you and then they have a license and they never let you go. So can you explain to me what I'm interested in is what the progress is? You've gone to market, you were asked to go to market. What is the progress on that? Because obviously these are very important systems.
Chair, so at the time, National Treasury had issued circular number 10 of 2017 on all ICT OEMs, and we were waiting for that product to come through. They were busy negotiating with the IBMs, the Microsoft, etc. They then issued circular 3 of 2018, any of these products with these service providers go to CETA or go through CETA. So we then went through that process that was a framework agreement that was set between CETA and National Treasury. That's the latest.
Are you confident that CETA know what they're doing? Because we're having particular problems with them at the moment.
I cannot comment on CETA. I can comment on what we did to validate what we're getting. SARS had already had pricing arrangements with IBM for similar equipment. So we had prices to check against in terms of whether we are getting value or not. I can confirm that the pricing that they came back with versus the pricing that SARS had contracted on previously on same equipment, there was a quite a discount. So I believe that the NT National Treasury CETA framework agreement with IBM did yield value. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Let's move on to the next item, which is fleet management, which is, if we, colleagues, we go on the bundle to page 11. I just want to run through these now. This is for, obviously, your fleet, your vehicles that SARS make use of, valued at 200 million. And there was an ask for an expansion to 75 to increase it to up to 2021 at an amount of 75 million, an increase of 75 million, which was a variance of 37%. Why would you want to simply increase this? Why do you not want to test the market? Why do you have to wait for Treasury to tell you, hang on a second, you're not the only suppliers of vehicles? Why do you have to test the market? Why didn't you test the market before Treasury told you to?
Okay, so when I came into the organization, there was a service provider providing that service. We went out an open tender, and the incumbent came through that process. What I decided to do was to make sure that all costs, including incidental costs that are attracted as a result of our fleet, are included in this transaction. So that amount is not an amount that goes to the service provider, the 200 million, for instance. There's fuel costs there. There is paying of fines. There is traffic fines. There is insurance claims. There's a number of things that the service provider has nothing to do with. But for transparency reasons, I wanted everybody to have a sense of what will be managed by this service provider from a cost point of view. There was an element, I speak under correction, I don't have the documents here. There was an element of those pass-through costs that were not included. And I wouldn't have gone out to tender. I just wanted to make sure that the contract is fully reflective for audit purposes of other pass-through costs that are incurred elsewhere that would come through this particular vehicle. So we were not going to, the service provider was not going to get the 75 million. It was other costs. I think it was maintenance of fleet that had been excluded from the contract. But I wanted to make sure that when the contract is audited in its fullness, all the costs that were incurred as a result of the fleet is included. So it was taking maintenance costs that were sitting somewhere else and putting them under the contract and making sure that the service provider, if there is a fleet, a vehicle to be maintained, it's a pass-through cost through the various network of centers that maintain the vehicles. But it can account within the right procurement vehicle, which was that contract. So in effect, what we were doing in that transaction is to pull a maintenance part of the contract that sits somewhere and is managed through the dealer network back into the contract, such that this service provider manages the entire set of pass-through costs within that contract. Thank you.
I understand that, but effectively that's making provision for unforeseen expenses, right? Now surely that could just be a budget line item. Does need to be a procurement, because effectively I'm interested in the relationship you're dealing it's currently with Fleet Africa. So have you are you talking about including that amount of money? I see the pass-through costs are 182 million. All All right. The actual management and management is 44 million. So are we talking about 182 gifted to Fleet Africa, and they keep it whether there's maintenance or not, or is it on an ad hoc basis? Well, I don't know where you are at the moment because they've told you to go to market. So first of all, can you explain to us where you are at the moment, and then can you assure us that the amounts of money that are passed through costs, as you call them, are on an ad hoc basis and not... that a company is not receiving X amount for maintenance, whether or not it's incurred or not. What is your arrangement there?
We are currently looking at how we're going to activate the recommendation from National Treasury to say go out to the market. I must explain that it's dealer-linked transactions. So a dealer for Nissan is a dealer for Nissan, and maintenance goes through there. And going out to the market is a bit of a challenge. But we have not responded yet. We might have coffee with our colleagues later on where we bring our case post this, because I think the relationship is such that we can argue and they can say, no, you're still you're not buying it. So we are looking at our possible options going forward. We have not activated that. I can assure you that that cost, the service provider doesn't even see the 184, and even the 75 they wouldn't see. But they would enable that. So somebody would phone and say, I need a vehicle booked, and I'm at this entire branch, and they would facilitate that process. Yes, it's an expense item, but I felt from a transparency point of view, I want people to know what is it that these people do and what are the incidental costs that pass through that could potentially pass through as on an ad hoc basis. Thank you.
Okay. I can see you trying to... I can see it's very, very difficult to to procure a service that's not certain. As you know, when it's going to happen, so it's going to be very tricky. Right, then we go to the next non-support. So the lease of office space. Colleagues, that's on page 22 of this particular bundle. Now, we're going to get on to the conditionally supported matters. Why was there a problem with... Is this the same one that Honorable Smith was talking about, the Eskom Holdings, SOC, the Eskom Academy of Learning? Is that the same one? So why is it only expansions as well? Do you know? Has that been shelved? As you said earlier, that's been shelved completely. I don't want to waste time if it's the same one.
It has not happened. There would have been two transactions there, the space and the fit out, because if you're going to be training people, you need to remove ESCOM setting and put specific standards equipment. So that would have been two transactions, the lease, as well as the fit out for the inside of the building. So to kit it to be able to meet the requirements.
Okay, right. So that's not going yet. All right. Now if we can move to the next item, which is the appointment of the SARS National Bargaining Forum chairperson. That's on page 27, colleagues. Can you give us what the progress there or the explanation there? Of why the processor's here and why UB has been turned down. If I can help you, it was an amount of a 3-year contract of three. It was with Elanga Labor Associates. An amount of 3 million rand a year, more or less. And there was a request for an extension of 542,000.
Okay.
So can you comment on that?
So we had a bit of a challenge here in that we've got a national bargaining forum that needs to be chaired by an independent chair. And the national bargaining forum's constitution, where SARS participate together with organized labor, makes a provision for each member of organized labor to nominate a chair and through a process to then appoint the chair. It was a bit difficult to take this out on an open tender because if the constitution of that particular body makes a provision that the chair shall be jointly appointed through a process, going out on an open tender could get somebody that parties are not compatible with. So that was a reason why we had to go to ask to Treasury to say we are in a dilemma. It's going to be a procurement transaction, and we believe that it qualifies to deviate or to expand the previous arrangement with the entity that was appointed, Ilanga. And our colleagues at National Treasury turned us down. We since went out on an open tender, and that process has been concluded, and we will deal with how we engage with organized labor in terms of the outcomes of that particular process. But it becomes difficult if there is a constitution that guides this process elsewhere, and yet it's a procurement transaction. But I'm confident that we'll be able to satisfy both.
In the first instance, how did you acquire the services of Ilanga?
So it was before I joined SARS. I noted that it was acquired through a deviation process at that time, historically.
Okay, all right.
Well, the chair raises a very good point. It started in March 2014, and I'm sure that arrangement with the various bodies must be in another place at the same time. So perhaps you need to find somebody who was around at that time and work out how they did it. What is the progress though at the moment? Do we have somebody in place? Because the original contract was from March 2014 to 20 February 2017. How are you bridging the gap at the moment?
So, Chair, what we decided to do was to go out on a three-code system to bridge the gap. This transaction passed through my office for a bid adjudication committee yesterday. So it was the outcomes of the open tender process was supposed to be adjudicated yesterday. I'm not sure whether the bid adjudication committee did authorize it or not. So to answer your question, we went on a 3 or 4 month RFQ process, and that's how we bridged the gap. Thank you.
All right. Now, if we move on to the next one, which is page 35 to 42, Executive Search Services. Now, these are people who are effectively, for the sake of the committee, are headhunters. All right? They make you get talent from Harvard. Okay. My query, okay, first of all, let's go to the basis of it. The Treasury say you need to go through a competitive bidding process. And so the question is why didn't you? And then the other question is most organizations have an HR department, which obviously you have, and those HR departments normally deal with various recruitment agencies on an ad hoc basis. So they advise them, look, we need this sort of person. They put it out to the market. These recruitment agencies run around the market and do their headhunting, come back and say, here are three candidates for you to interview. Why are we engaging executive search companies, which is Talent Africa, Mardworks, and the amount that is, do we have a contract with somebody for 15 million rand? In the Treasury letter, it says that the current contract is for a period of 4 years from 1 March 2014 to 28 February 2018 in the amount of 15,392,726. Now, so that's 15.3 million rand. What I'm concerned about is the way I understood this industry is that if they provide you with a successful candidate, they pay you, they then charge you for that service. Do we have a set service with these types of companies where you just pay them regardless? Because it's talking about a contract worth 15 million.
Sure.
Let's just start there.
So we had a panel of service providers. So we went out on tender and said we're looking for executive search. And why did we limit it to executive search? SARS was going through an operating models change, so there were going to be executive positions that were going to be created. There was going to be a need to recruit firstly internally, and if not, then go external, but only for the class of employees that are executive. So from grade 7, which is middle management and lower, we had set up a process to recruit internally. So we set out a panel, and I must explain that the panel is on as and when required basis. So you're setting up a vehicle so that at any given time when you require resources, you are able to tap into that particular procurement vehicle. What would have happened is that the market would have bid it. There would have been a rate to say we charge a percentage, whatever percentage, and those that were competitive enough would have gone through and formed that panel. And they would specialize in different types of services. Others would recruitment services. Others would be executive headhunters for tax-related products. And others would be HR, etc. So it was a panel. It was not to say that 15 million was money that was guaranteed to be expended. It was to say, let's create a vehicle so that the organization is not hamstrung. Should a person leave at a senior level, you can be able to first advertise normally, and if you're not getting a resource, then you go to this as the next type of recruitment mechanism. Thank you.
So okay, please help me and educate me. I'm confused. You refer to a contract in the value of 15 million rand, but you say people are used on an ad hoc as and when basis. And then the expansion that's requested is 4.1 million. Surely that should be making provision for something in your budget, not procuring a service. Because you procure a service, you are signing a contract. Please explain that to me, because it doesn't add up with your getting things on an ad hoc basis.
So you would have...
The specific reference here is a contract for a specific period of time, a four-year contract for 15.3. That doesn't sound like as and when.
So I would... How it would normally work is that over that period, there would be money loaded onto that contract for ad hoc as and when required basis. I suspect what would have happened in that particular contract, when that contract was coming to an end, the value of the contract would have been exhausted. And there would have been probably still recruitment initiatives that were going on, necessitating that value be loaded onto that particular contract to be able to still continue to recruit.
Don't use the word probably, because you're here to give us the facts. So if you're speculating, then we're not doing much.
So Chair, factually, the contract would have come to the end of the value.
Not would have come, came to the end.
Okay. Came to the end of the value. We went to Treasury to ask for the 4 million to add on top of that value for the figure of 4 million, which was not supported, which we since went out on a tender process.
Okay, so effectively we're talking about an appropriations issue. You were saying, can we appropriate these funds to keep them in store, 4 million, to help with this function? It wasn't a procurement of a specific product with a specific... It was basically making available certain funds. And then where are we now on that? Now, you say you've gone to market. How did you go to market if it's an ad hoc system? I don't understand it. I understand the idea of a panel, don't get me wrong. But how did you go to market if it's ad hoc?
So these are enabling contracts. So we go out to the market and we are clear. We may consume, we may not consume. And bidders know exactly that this is an enabling contract with no commitment in terms of value. So we don't go, when we sign the contract, we don't say you are guaranteed 1 million of the 4 million. It becomes an enabling contract, the same like you do with a transversal contract at Treasury. You go out and say, I've got a potential to spend this much, but I don't commit that I'll spend that much because I don't know what the budgets will be, what the cuts will be from year to year. So that's, I don't know whether I've answered the question. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much. Okay, if we move to the next not supported item, it is open text, and it's page 69 to 75 in the bundle. you give us some background to that open text issue? I'll have it here somewhere else. Are you with me on that?
We're just taking the short.
Commissioner is looking. This open text contract is an ICT contract that SARS utilizes to character recognize for scanned documents that are scanned through the e-filing environment, and it picks it up on the back end, and it allows it to so it's enterprise content management. And it deals in the main with documents that are scanned through the e-filing environment, such that it's able to recognize certain characters and allocate into specific fields. Thank you.
All right, so the question that I had here was, the objection from Treasury was that Documentum was not selected as a strategic ECM solution for SARS. SARS chose Captivate to perform the scanning functions due to its capability to integrate with the Documentum ECM solution, and that the solution had been fully integrated in the automated tax processor, service manager, e-filing, and customs solution. OpenText is a sole supplier of Documentum and Captiva software. OpenText advised that the document version 6.6 used by SARS has reached the end of life and cannot be supported to regular means beyond 30 June 2017. Now that immediately puts my flag up and I ask why. Why has the system come to its end? Do you have any comment on that? Because that once again is one of these issues where IT folk come in and they speak this language that mere mortals cannot understand. And our eyes glaze over within 5 minutes unless we really know what we're talking about, and they can sell us a dummy. So can you explain why the system is suddenly now not functional and it needs replacement? Because this is an old tactic. Now, sometimes it's valid and sometimes it's not, but most people don't know the difference. I sort of know if you do. Thanks.
So, Chair, this speaks to software lifecycle management within the organization. So the fact that the equipment has come out of maintenance and support does not mean you cannot continue using it. You can continue using it, but the service provider has got a right at a given time to say, I don't have skills anymore, I don't retain skills anymore to be able to support you should you have downtime on that particular product. So you can still continue to utilize it. And in this instance, when it says end of life, it does not mean that version we cannot continue to use as an organization. We would then go through with our IT colleagues to say, where does it fit in terms of the software and architecture strategy in the organization, in terms of the life cycle of the product? Does it make sense for us to be able to upgrade the product? And in this particular instance, the team believe that whilst Treasury is saying no, and whilst we still want to engage and explain in the life cycle of this software product, where is it, when did we last do the last upgrade, we normally try to sit at N-2. So from the latest, we try to be at least -2 below. So if you are at Windows 10, we try to be in the organization at Windows 8. So we not always are keeping up with the latest because it's costly. So that's the strategy that the organization has taken. So that is what would have then informed whether we accept the service provider's assertions in as far as this is concerned. So it's not a decision that IT just makes. It's informed by the strategic decision that the organization has taken. So in this particular instance, not supported would have meant we are continuing with that version at the risk that if we need support and we are not supported, we would have to find a way of dealing with it, because it would challenge us not to be able to have the e-filing and enterprise document management systems being supported. So we are continuing at that risk.
But I think the logic of the Brother said, if you look, the initial contract was for 4 years, and then it was extended for 3 years. And now the request was to extend it for 9 months. I thought you would actually be saying we requested an extension for 9 months so that we could be doing A, B, C, D. So when that 9 months come to an end, we will now be in a correct position or in a better position. Otherwise, to just extend for 9 months, and after that 9 months, you now look for 6 months, and after 6 months, 3 months, and after 3 months, 4 years. So I think it was giving a platform maybe to expand on those things so that we have an understanding of what was the logic.
If I may add to that, what really concerned me is that this letter is from the 13th of October 2017, the letter of Treasury to yourselves. And we're sitting now in June. Look, you know, the job of this committee is not to stop government and not to stop expending money. It's just to make sure it's done properly. So we want you to have the solution. And when you mention, are you saying that you're sitting with a system that, should it fail, e-filing crashes? Is that what we're talking about? Because that is a dire situation. And then my follow-up question to that would be is, what have you done since October?
So in accepting this, there's a few things that I did. So I looked at, remember, it's maintenance and support. One of the things I considered was for the IT team to give me statistical history of how often did we call on the support part. Because then it would tell me how often do I consume the service going forward. And that informed that particular decision. But I have to say that, indeed, the service provider has said that they don't support. It does not mean that we don't have internal resources within the IT team to be able to work through, but it would be a matter of taking resources from other projects and allocating them to this, which is, yes, they've got a working knowledge of, but you would have wanted the OEM to support you because they would support you best on the latest version that they have, or the N-2 version. I think the risk is moderate. I wouldn't want to raise it as and be alarmist in terms of systems collapse. Thank you, Chair.
And Chair, I think it's very important. This is one aspect and to do with character recognition, which is not a big issue anymore as I understand it. This is from the days when we had more documents coming in where we needed. Today, most of the stuff is coming in electronically. So just to give context of the background of that, it came up originally we had to deal with OCR in 2008 when we were moving from a paper-based organization to where we are today, where it's predominantly electronic in one form or another.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. You must forgive me for being overly sensitive to IT people who hold you ransom, because it sounds to me that you're being held ransom. Effectively, what these people are saying is, if you step back and look at it, is we've sold you a system. We're not prepared to help you look after that system if it breaks unless you buy another one from us. That effectively is holding you ransom. You've got to step back and look at that. We recently had a gentleman who felt he could, that he had enough control over the SAPs that he could close them down over a weekend. And this, as should all South Africans, we take that pretty seriously. So be very careful of suppliers like that who suddenly tell you, you know, it's like buying a BMW, and then after 10 years of, no, hang on, I'm busy, after 10 years of having the BMW, they say, oh, we're not going to service your BMW anymore, and no one else in the country will, unless you buy another one. You know, got to be careful.
Chair, we note this and we are very alert to that issue, and I don't like being held to ransom by a supplier. I mean, we had the issue of Microsoft XP in our organization and we said it was out of support. They will not support any issues going forward. We had to go to 7. We're getting to the point that Windows 7 is getting to end of life as well, and it's an ongoing thing in terms of the software companies. We take note of the comment and we're very alert to it. Thank you.
And now we go to the network infrastructure contract. This is now, colleagues, under expansions Q2. And in that big bundle, it's 157, page 157. What is the progress on this? This was an initial contract with Internet Solutions for 7 years for 866 million rand, and there was a deviation requested, I think, of 430 million. My apologies. So Treasury have not supported. Well, what is the progress of this?
I'm just trying to chair to get to the transaction Internet Solutions. So what has since happened, Chair, is that on the network server and equipment tender, it was a tower that we issued out to the market. We have since awarded that to three service providers through an open tender process. And that's the latest on the network servers and end user equipment tender.
Okay, and then Treasury are happy with that. Because this is going to lead into my next question. I don't want to belabor every single contract here. But if we look at expansions Q2, then there's a whole section of contracts relating to leases. It's that whole long page there of relating to leases. And most of them are conditional support. And when you read the letters from Treasury, they pretty much all say the same thing, is that you've got to make sure that you've got a market-related square meter price. And I asked you to go to the e-portal tender. All I want to ask on those as a group is, can you give us, has that been done? Maybe Solly can pitch in. It's a whole lot of items. Has that been done? Have you, I don't want to go through everyone because there's literally 30, 40, 50 of them. What is the progress on this? So Treasury said to you, listen, in principle we're okay, but make sure you're getting proper square meterage rates. Has that been done in all these cases?
Chair, can I just go back to the network equipment transaction? This is Cisco equipment, just to be correct on the record. It's Cisco equipment, and we since went to Cisco, and they gave us their accredited resellers, and we went out on a limited bid with those accredited resellers, and we've since appointed one that went through the procurement process. That's what we that's the latest on the network infrastructure support, just to clear that. On the others, as I initially stated, we use the roads report, amongst others, to make sure that the square meterage on all the transactions, when we take them to the bid adjudication committee, one of the key decision makers making points is whether there is a comparative review of the square meterage rate, and the organization has accepted that roads report holds authority. Not only that, we also check with other sites that we are leasing to make sure that we are within the range. Thank you. So I can confirm we do check.
But there's an underlying theme you are asking in respect of instances where National Treasury has either rejected or conditionally approved. So we can give this committee an assurance that in all instances where National Treasury has not agreed with us, we have complied, and we have gone back and engaged in the instance. So firstly, we comply. Secondly, we go back and engage in the instance where we think that they may potentially not have understood what we're trying to do. So we'll go back and engage, and resubmit if we have to resubmit. Only at the instance where National Treasury supports us, we will then have proceeded.
So, you know, we like a system of checks and balances. We've got Solly here. Solly, has this been done in terms of all these leases? Because from what our colleagues there are saying is that they've taken your advice, they've checked that Square Meterage is a decent market price. Have they come back to you and has it all been done? I caught you off guard there.
We haven't verified all those leases whether they received really reasonable prices, but we can do that if you want us to submit a report.
Currently, the Chair, there is no requirement for us to go back in this. I'm happy to. We want to be compliant and simply do the right thing in terms of this. And I'm happy to go back if that is the requirement. But there is currently no requirement that we go back to them. But I can assure you it has been done.
No, sure. We use the system. We have Treasury in the room. The point is, are you telling me then that if Treasury say we give you a conditional, we support your application for an expansion on the condition that, that's normally the wording, and then they say that you make sure that the square meterage is a fair market rate, and we ask you to go out to the e-tender portal, yeah. There's no requirement to then go back and say, following your last letter, we have now gone to we've taken those measures and this is the result, and then Treasury say, thank you very much, it's all good. There's no requirement to do that.
So in supply chain provisions, there's a contract management system that Treasury runs. So once we've gone through the internal adjudication processes, or pursuant to the letter we would have gotten from Treasury, we are required to load all our transactions, whether they are tenders, deviations, expansions, and that's why they're able to extract the report they've given you. But we all our transactions, we do report back, and there is a prescript to say within a certain period of time, you need to report back to say, I have indeed awarded this work. I think in the back end, it would be a matter of reconciliation to say, we gave them this permission, they are now reporting.
Thank you for explaining that that process to us. And there's just last two, Chair. One, I'm at a bit of a loss, and I must apologize to you. You don't have all these documents. You don't. This was from Treasury. Then I must take my hat off to you. You've actually performed remarkably without having documents in front of you.
Yeah, No. He's not talking of some strange documents. It is the letters you sent to Treasury,
yes,
and the responses from Treasury. So you should have them.
We're using our own reconciliation in these A3s.
Yes, no, that's fine. No, we've had worse in front of us, that's what I'm saying. okay, so I'm a bit of a loss on this one. Yeah, it's a Tourvest Travel Services, Travel Management Services. It was not supported by Treasury. Now, unfortunately, in my bundle, it should be on page 244, but it's not there. So can you help with that?
So it was initially not supported,
can we just start with what it was for? Can you explain the contract and how it all worked before we get to Treasury? Thanks.
So this transaction is for outsourced travel management. So it's a travel booking, it's a traveling agency that manages all travel within the organization. That's what the service is about. And we had contracted Tourvest, and we had wanted to expand because we had a contract that had, if I remember correctly, 3 years with an option to extend with another 2 years. And we went to Treasury to say, if we extend with another 2 years, does it fall within a variation or expansion? And Treasury said, it does. I held a view that because contractually I had made a provision to extend that contract from the beginning by a further 2 years, because I wanted the first 3 years to assess the service provision of the entity. And we agreed to, our colleagues at Treasury said, no, that 2 years we made a provision for, you can't rely on, therefore we want you to go to and test the market on it. So what then happened was initially they did not support it, that we extend by the 2 years. They then asked that we, they then supported us having 3 months. We went out on tender, I think yesterday, at the ExCo subcommittee that transaction was adjudicated on, and it's on its way to the commissioner. So we went out on tender, and there's an outcome to that effect.
But then the final query is page 280. It relates to Project Line. What is Project Line about? Let's start there. Do you know about Project Line?
Project Lion was a contract with a company called Grant Thornton to review all tenders for a period 2008 to 14, and to look at them and to determine, give us recommendations in terms of those processes. That was concluded, the work done in terms of Project Lion. We are still engaging with Grant Thornton in terms of their response to us, just to understand certain aspects that they have given, and I'm busy with that currently.
Okay, now what was the issue with Treasury not supporting an extension of the work?
Chair, through you, I wasn't party to this discussion, so I'm dealing with what I've been told in terms of Project Lion. In Project Lion's documentation that's been presented to us, and this was part of my engagement with Grant Thornton in terms of their initial work done, they have many aspects in the report where they say needs further investigation. They don't say there's anything wrong, but they need this to be investigated more, this to be investigated more. And it was to go and do that. I'm busy evaluating, re-evaluating to determine if that was truly necessary, because the way the report was presented to me, and I want to be very open here, it doesn't give me much comfort to say I'm happy with what was I was presented and give me satisfaction to go and get a further deviation. That request for a deviation happened prior to my tenure, and we are determining whether there's any further work needed. But it was to investigate certain other items that Grant Thornton identified. I do not at this point share the view we need to go back further, but that was a point at some point in time in the past.
Okay, who would have requested that deviation or that expansion?
It was requested by the commissioner.
The previous commissioner?
The commissioner is on suspension.
Yes, okay. All right. Why do you think you would want to have jumped this contract up to 50 million?
Gee, I'd be speculating if I was to elaborate further at this point. I don't have sufficient details. I have engaged Grant Thornton, as I indicated. I wasn't happy with the report in terms of the way it was presented to me, and I have not done the evaluation to satisfy myself at this point in time.
You know, being familiar with that industry myself, so effectively what they've given you no guidance. Have you engaged with them again and said, sorry?
Chairperson, I think we need to be consistent. We don't allow other accounting officers or whoever comes here and present to us and tell us they don't have information. And I have a problem when you allow him to say that and we don't say anything about that. When he comes to this meeting, he knows the deviations and expansions that you have approved. We need information from you. We don't want you to say, I do not have information. This is the information that you should have there and present it to us. So if you don't have it, who's supposed to have it? Are we supposed to have that information? We're not doing what you're doing. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, noted the comment, and I fully concur with the member's view, and I will provide it.
Okay. See, I'm just concerned that the original contract with Grant Thornton was for 12 million, 12.4 million. And the letter to, well, the letter back to Mr. Moyani from Treasury indicates that the variance sought is up to 50 million. So in other words, it's almost, well, it's a 415.5% increase after the main investigation work has been done. In other words, what you're telling us is that the report came through and it says there's mopping up to be done. We've done this work, there's investigation, further investigation we've done here. So it's kind of like the majority of the blood has been swept up off the floor, but we need to just get to these corners here, you know? And that's almost costing four times what the original one cost. What is your take on that?
So, Chair, maybe let me put context into this. From a procurement point of view, we came to a point where we felt that, because the report was a confidential report, and the confidential report was shared with the accounting authority. And by supply chain management prescript, if you're going to have any expansion on a matter of continuity, you need to assess whether the deliverables for the first phase of the work were indeed delivered to the satisfaction. And because it was a confidential report, not shared shared only with the accounting authority, it was very difficult for me engaging with Treasury to provide rationale as to why we would want as an organization to go on with phase two. In engaging the accounting authority, it appeared, and as I say, I only got to see that phase one report after the current acting commissioner took over, where I then was able to have context as to why. And I think Treasury's challenge in not supporting it was that there must be some application of mind on whether phase one was delivered fully and what it is that you want to do in the subsequent phase. So now reading the report with hindsight, because this was before we saw the report, I saw the report and at the coming in of Commissioner Kinnan, there is quite a number of things that were left in that report to say, here you need to interview certain people, here you need to give people a right of reply, here you need to do that, which would have actually meant additional work in terms of field work. So now that I read the report with hindsight, it appears that in fact, in the report that I've read, this first phase work was not really, the second phase was not a matter of mopping up. It was a matter of going into detail and giving people the right of reply, interviewing them in detail, going to suppliers and asking them specific questions around what happened during the period that was being investigated.
Tell me, do you know, at the Commission, you've given this idea, it was the transactions from 2008 until 2014, which is one of the terms of reference. What was the terms of reference in terms of time allocated for the first 12 billion rand contract? How much time were they allocated to do that work? Do you know that offhand quickly?
I don't have it.
See, because in this industry, you can get a very clear picture what your principal wants when they give you the terms of reference. If they tell you to investigate all procurement for 6 years and you've got 6 months to do it, then you know they're not being serious, because there's no ways you could do it. If they tell you you can do it over 2 years, then you know that they're a little bit more serious. So I'm trying to get down to, do we know what the time period was? Because then we know whether or not the initial principal was being serious, first of all, about actually getting to the bottom of it. And then we also get an idea about whether or not there is actually a lot of work still to be done. But if this was a long period of time, then maybe the work should have been done and now we're just taking a chance. I'm just trying to get a handle on that.
I think if you look at the letter from National Treasury, that's page 261. For the initial 12 million, it's 2 months. If we are on the same page,
further extended by another 2 months at an additional 1.8 million. And then this request was now for 8 months for 50 million.
Yes, Chair. I just wanted to ask to confirm that, but I mean, you know, you just reading it out makes it sound nonsensical, doesn't it? You got 12 million for 2 months, another 2 months for 1.8, that's a hell of a discount, and then for another 8 months, 50 million. It's just not adding up. I'm trying to ask you, gentlemen, not that you're in the firing line, I'm trying to ask you what you know about this, because this is very concerning, the entire structure of this thing. And then my next follow-up question is, what has happened since September last year on this matter?
So let me try and because I wouldn't want us to sit here and drive the committee around the bend on explanations that we do not have. Because the best thing to do would be to say to you, we'll go and find that information. But let me just start this way. So this is one of the transactions that didn't go through the governance processes in SARS. So that's the first problem. It didn't. So because it didn't, you're getting the answers that you're getting, which is speculative. Only post-March have we then gotten some sense of what this transaction was about. Members of NBEC, because this is what it should have gone through, had then subsequently said, listen, we feel we can't support this transaction to proceed further. And lucky enough is that National Treasury had as well said, no, we don't support it. But we as well at NBEC did not have more information which we can be able to back at this particular transaction. I sit here, I haven't seen that report. And the chief financial officer hadn't seen that report until March. So, Chair, up until we have potentially been able to go through the details of that report once and the rationale behind it, it may be very difficult for us to really try and speculate in giving you answers, because tomorrow you are going to say you were on record, you said the following, and the information you provided was not true.
Okay, Acting Commissioner.
Chair, just to speak, and the issue of the Grant Thornton grant intended initial went through a normal process. That's that initial contract. I think we're talking of the subsequent year. What I'd like to just propose, Chair, if I may, I would like to ask the committee's indulgence that I address this to you once I've got and can present to you the facts as we have it. This report was received. It did not go through the normal processes to evaluate the report. And I think that's the concern that I have. And as accounting officer, when I came in, I started looking at various documents, which I've been doing continually since then. And this is the one report that I immediately asked for a evaluation by our legal department to say what are my obligations in terms of it, and I'm still awaiting that report as I sit here. I also met with Grant Thornton to tell them my concerns on my initial quick view of the report, and that's where I am today. But I'd really ask if I could come back to you. I think we need to be transparent on these things, and I'm not trying to not be. But I don't have further information at this stage.
Well, the thing is, not to put too fine a point on it, we have a situation. Do you have any idea, offhand, just quick question and answer, how many SEM transactions happened between 2008 and 2014? Do you want to hazard a guess? 10,000, 20,000,
100,000? We do on average 21 tenders a year, and okay. On average we do around 80 deviations and expansions a year in number, roughly.
Okay.
So you've
been... So big numbers. So effectively, you've alluded to a figure of about 100. So in 6 years, we're talking about around about 600 things that an investigation should look after. In other words, I think it's fair to say that 2 months to do that is quite possibly... Thank you.
Chair, I just need to say it was focused specifically in the ICT
Okay, all right, fair enough. The point is, from my experience, 2 months is ridiculously short. And then we have 2 months cost 12 billion, and then another 2 months cost 1.8, and it just doesn't seem to add up and make sense. And of course, not to put too fine a point on it, but the suspended commissioner has been involved in rogue reports before. And so we've got to be very, very careful that this is not another instance. So I really would like to encourage the TSARS come back with a full report on the on this entire matter. I don't know if it's possible for us to get a copy of the Thornton report, but I think there's definitely needs to be accounting on this, Chair, because it doesn't make sense to go from 12 to 1.8 and then let's do another 8 months for 50 million. It sounds extremely fishy. And I think we definitely need a full report on it. Not that it's any of your fault, but this needs to be brought out into the harsh light of the day.
Chair, I'm happy to provide a full report. I wouldn't mind just taking advice in terms of providing the actual document. Personally, I wouldn't have any issue, but I need a period. I can't do it tomorrow. I am busy in a process of evaluation. I don't want to come back with nonsense. I want to come with something comprehensive that gives you substance, Chair. So please, if we could just have, if you could give me a month or two, let's say a month to at least do this properly and come back to you.
I see on page 260, there was a request from National Treasury to have sight of the report. Chair, yes, there was. I did try to allude to that earlier on. And at that time, we had already suffered about 1.5 billion in budget cuts. And I had, as the acting CFO, decided that this project cannot continue in any way, because with the 1.5 billion rand cut in your baseline, and one of the things that we had to cut to zero was consultancy, and this would have fallen under consultancy. So I wrote back to Treasury to say, from a budget point of view, this project cannot continue. There is no money. And that was the response that we gave back. And I then formally withdrew the request to continue with that specific project because there was no money for it.
See, I'm entirely comfortable with the actions here. All I'm saying is I would like to get behind the veil and find out why, whoever it was, well, it was the commissioner, who asked for the matter to be extended or to be expanded by 415%. What were the reasons for that? That's what I would like some info on. Chair, with that, I'm done. Thank you.
Right, thanks. Any follow-ups, Comrade Chilwan? Then, Comrade Kikan? Okay, Comrade Chilwan.
Chairperson, I just have two quick questions. I want to follow up on the issue of the appointment of Fleet Africa. You spoke about the pass-through cost, e.g. fuel and petrol. You also mentioned something like traffic fines. I just want to understand, does SARS pay for traffic fines for its officials? That's question number one. And then question number two, it's on the appointment of executive search companies. I understand, and I think it's a view of all of us, we understand that SARS is a highly specialized institution. But I have a problem. You know what? Why acting commissioner? I have a problem with outsourcing for recruitment, because it makes like South Africa doesn't have qualified people. We've got undergraduates who are sitting at home, who are looking for jobs every day. But because once you say you go out for a tender for a company to look for you, an executive, I think for me it doesn't sit well. I think as an institution you would find ways to to use your internal. You said it, you've got your internal, but this one is basically on your top executive. I don't know, maybe top executive in relation to people with MBA or PhD. But you also have to have your programs like your internships, learnerships, so that you are able to alleviate the issue of unemployment that is hugely affecting our own population as the South African citizens. So I think on that one, we really need to look over because, you know, it gets so suspicious that you will hire a company that will search for you in a way that you, in the background, we don't know what's going to happen. You look for that particular person, you can do it in-house, and then you can't find that particular person, and then it will expire. What is it? Who is wanted? Who is not wanted? It raises suspicion. And everybody who's watching this hearing now, who's qualified, who's an accountant, who's got a degree, a master's, an honors, is asking himself or herself, what is it that I cannot provide to help my country? So I think these are the matters, Chairperson, that I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Comrade Kuno? Then you just note.
Thanks, Chair. Earlier on, I thought Comrade Tim was coming on deviations, only to find that he was dealing with his part, the expansion. So I didn't finish that, what I wanted to ask earlier on. But it's about the DSTV subscriptions, just to make it easy for everyone. And I heard Comrade Vincent very well as he was presenting, and I agree with his sentiments. But the question is that, How long is this contract going to be? This DSTV thing of giving information? That's the first question. And really, acting commissioner, when you come to SCOPA, you really have to be prepared. We want information. The fact that you will bring information you were not ready, it's really unacceptable. If you have heard us yesterday, I think colleagues today are a little bit tired, and that's why you are getting off with it. Otherwise, if you were here yesterday, you'd know exactly where I'm coming from. And I think if we do it to water affairs, we should do it to everyone. You are an acting commissioner. You've been there. It's not the first time that you are at SARS. I've seen you before. I know that you've been working for SARS. So you need to have this information that we are requesting from you today. But Chairperson, okay, let's go to travel agencies that you had to extend their contract. I don't know, maybe it's us who don't understand as members of parliament, but it's not only you as an entity or, a government entity. You are a government entity. It's not only you, but a lot of people. I don't know who does your contract management. If there's anyone who's been employed by SARS to do contract management, they would know that this contract is coming to an end at this particular time, 6 months, way before that 6 months. But we all wait until 2 months or a month before the contract expires for you to extend the contract, which is not fair. Top Verso, I didn't hear you very well when we were talking about your travel agency. There's lots of travel agencies all over South Africa. It's not something that you can say this is a scarce skills and you can't get anyway. There are lots of them. And if there was a contract manager within SARS, you wouldn't have gone through the problems that you have gone to extending any contract. And really, I want to appeal to National Treasury to find and make it a point that if it's negligence and anybody doesn't want to do that they're supposed to be doing, don't approve whatever deviations or expansions they want to do. Because the monopoly that you are trying to get out of
as South Africa will never get out of it. It will be something that we talk about in the boardrooms, and after that it will happen over and over again. And the transformation that we want to make sure that everybody gets a fair chance of getting there, there will never be. For instance, DSTV, there's no one in South Africa who can compete with DSTV, because we've made it a specialized thing that nobody can get in there. And it's so wrong. And I think if we give our people chance to actually get into the market, we'll be able to compete with DSTV. My last and the maintenance of the vehicles, the 700, was it 700 million or 70 million, but there is 70 there of the vehicles. If you buy a car, every car that you buy, that's a common sense. You buy it with a maintenance plan. It's part of the contract. So I don't understand if you have to prepare a document, a tender document, and say we are purchasing vehicles as such from this particular company. And then you go and budget outside of that for maintenance. It doesn't make sense. The maintenance should come up with a price. If the price is 300 and the maintenance is 20,000, then it should be 320, so that those maintenance doesn't come back. But if you know that you need to renew, extend the maintenance plan, it should be part of that. If I can do that as an individual, why can't government entities do the same thing, or a government department do the same thing? So the problem is what we've been talking about, non-planning. We do things, I don't know if the word abruptly helps me with what I'm trying to. Yes, haphazardly. We do not plan properly. Because if you have planned properly, this maintenance cost and all other costs that are there, it would have been part of the planning, of the initial planning of the contract. There are other things that you can say, really, this one, there's nothing else that you could do. But we had to do what we did. But other things cannot be condoned at all. My last question, Chairperson, would be on SARS IT system. And I wanted to ask solely this, because remember they came on IFMS. Maybe my question won't be that clear, but you'll be clarifying me. I thought, and that's the problem when we have systems within government that are not coordinated. If you don't talk to each other, then it's going to be a problem. If you want IFMS to work for everybody, then that's what it should be. The softwares that you are purchasing for the whole government as National Treasury should be the base of the softwares that you are trying to buy in all the departments, in all entities. So I just wanted to ask you that if you have to budget for that, and it has nothing to do with what we were trying to solve. I know that it's not yet concluded, but we should all be trying to. I mean, if we say, for instance, today, for the next 5 years, we want Parliament to be in Pretoria in 5 years to come, then it means everything that we do as Parliament, it has to be programs and projects to make sure that at the end of the day, when we say Pretoria, then everything, we should have budgeted for that and prepare ourselves to go there. So if we're going to have a system that is going to be purchased by government and all departments are coming up with their own systems, don't you think at some stage you're going to have a problem, a system blockage, the system that we're trying to make sure that we get out of and make sure that we all have a system that talks to each other as a government, something that we know that we'll be priding ourselves with and say, this is what we are trying to do for uniformity of government. So, yeah, I hope that they will clarify. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks very much. I think we want to round off this engagement, but maybe let's respond to the matters that have been raised by the two comrades.
Thank you, Chair, and through you, to deal with some of the matters that I'm going to ask my CFO to deal with, just broader contract management and timelines in ensuring that, and also respond in terms of our training and bursary budget, which we alluded to earlier. If I may just deal firstly with the issue of traffic fines, we do recover those. There's a process that goes through to recover those fines. In terms of the executive search, and I want to just assure the members that we go through an internal process first. And the vast majority of our appointments that we make are either internal or through other people applying through the normal process. In terms of specialist skills, when we get to base erosion, profit shifting, transfer pricing, structured finance deals, we are in direct competition with the broader financial sector. And these people are very sought out, and we're even finding our people being headhunted from abroad. So we have to go through specialist headhunting services to try and get some of these skills and get them on board. And that's a process that's ongoing. But firstly and primarily, we go through an internal process. And obviously, we continue. And the member alluded to the issue. We need to be using the whole issue of internships. And we have a significant graduate program that we have developed a lot of these skills internally in the different divisions, whether it be in terms of our alignment with the accounting profession with regards to people doing articles with us, whether it be bringing in graduates at a base salary for a period of 3 years and really training them up and giving them a skill that they can either go back into the market or we pull those skills into our organization where they are needed. And that's an extensive program that we could brief separately if need be. But it is working, and we continue to bring in graduates into the system. In terms of the issue of DSTV, how long is the contract? The contract expires on the 30th of March 2020, and obviously in terms of the time period, we would be reviewing that going forward. Just lastly from my side, Chair, the issue of vehicles' maintenance costs. The member is 100% correct that our vehicles do come with a maintenance agreement. But a large number of our vehicles, the maintenance agreements have expired, and we have to carry the maintenance costs in that regard. But I'd just like to ask my colleague to please respond in terms maybe further on the vehicles if he wants. But the issue on the timelines of contract dealing specifically with the travel agency and then the bursary matter.
On the just on the last one on the vehicles, indeed 2 years is mostly the maintenance plan, and then most of our vehicles we depreciate them over a longer period than 2 years, obviously. And for that difference between when we write it off completely in the books from when the maintenance expires, we write it over 10 years period. So 2 years, we've got 8 years that you need to maintain that vehicle. You can either extend the motor plan upfront, which means your upfront paying cost and the time value of money wouldn't show that to be a prudent decision. So you write the motor plan, and then in the 8 years, you decide to pay. And I hope that clarifies it. And then on the issue of planning, you'd have seen in the pack some of the expansions that we are doing are not necessarily for contracts that are expiring tomorrow or next month or 6 months' time. We have gone and looked over a 3-year cycle to say, where do we want to still have presence as far, and did some studies. So you'll find contracts there that are expiring in 2018 November, but we have already gone to Treasury in 2017. And that speaks exactly to what you're alluding to. We, as an organization, we are trying to make sure that the planning happens much, much earlier so that we're able to deal with it. With this. To your point, And I tried to explain, the travel management issue was a contractual issue, which had a contract that had a clause that says you can extend for another 24 months. And it's not necessarily lack of planning that led us into that situation. SARS, over the past 9 years, for every 3-year cycle, we have changed service providers through an open tender process or the travel management. I believe we have given the market a fair chance, and we demonstrated that every 3 years we go in an open tender process and we get, in most instances, new service providers. So we've not, on 3-year cycles, given the same service providers the work, of course, through an evaluation process. So I can give this committee assurance that we look at contracts. I know what contracts are expiring in my environment at any given time, and we start the procurement process much, much earlier. And when we need to go to Treasury, we go to Treasury. There are those where we are not able to for some unforeseeable reasons, but I think in the main, we've got a contract management approach that allows us to preempt what is expiring in the future, and we'll continue to harness it and to improve it. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. The last question would be, you know, every president, when they come in, they talk about us, we are using contractors a lot and consultants a lot in government. And what we are trying to achieve, I mean, it ends up being small talk of, employment in South Africa. If we don't stop this contract and over using of consultants, even in jobs that you know that they are very important, SARS makes a lot of mistakes. If you have an in-house IT system that can actually manage all that, instead of taking people from outside to come and do that, I'm just making an example, it becomes a serious problem. Unemployment in South Africa is not something that is we're not raising it now. You all know that there's a problem of unemployment. And I think if we all work together as South Africans and make sure that instead of having contractors, that we could have a job, you know, for somebody who's been trying to get a job forever. And we do have a lot of skills in South Africa. We can deal away with this contracts that you are trying to renew now and then. And the other question, which is the last one that I had, is for you to go to a principal company. I would have not called you verbatim, you know, what you said exactly. But you said you went to a principal company that you had a deal with and asked for permission for them to do another job that you wanted to do, but it should be them. That is a problem of the monopoly that you are talking about. And the deviations and expansions, actually, they actually make sure that we only have sole provider throughout. I'm not saying it's a problem of SARS per se, because when you are presenting and with the documents that we have read, it does not really talk to that. But all I'm trying to say, I know that in some of your submissions here, there are sole suppliers. And that's what we are against. We are against sole suppliers. We want to actually open the market and make sure that everybody has a fair, this thing becomes a competitive thing. If we keep on saying Basel Red is the best, then we'll never have anyone coming in, Kuno's contractors coming in on board at some stage to come and compete with that, because we are always making them priorities. So it's an emphasis that I'm trying to give you and say, let's deal away with contractors and find a way of bringing our people, the South Africans, into the market. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. And lastly, Ross.
Chairperson, can I just ask a question on clarification? If I understood correctly, if there's a conditional support from Treasury, then the entity, or SARS in this case, doesn't have to report back once the condition is met. We picked up on a point there, and I think the Honourable Brother said thank you for guiding us in this regard, but I'd just like to check our checks and balances from the committee's point of view and the Treasury in terms of the process, because I know Section 79 of the PFMA requires Treasury then to report if there's a deviation or extension or conditional support, needs to immediately inform the Auditor General. I think that's a bit of a check and balances on our side. But just in terms of your remark that you said you were not obligated to report back, if you can just clarify that for us so that we can be informed as to what our process should be, that we can have properly informed checks and balances on our side.
So let me start by saying quickly, the provisions of supply chain management instruction note from Treasury number 3 of 2016-2017, does not make a provision for support or conditional support. It says prior written approval. So we do have to then say, what does it mean when it says conditional support? What does it mean when it says support? When the guiding document, the AG will come to me to audit me and say, I'm auditing you against this instruction note. It says prior written approval. What did you accept when you accepted support and conditional support? And our friends at Treasury and us are talking around that in terms of what does it mean. But to answer your question, there is a Treasury regulation instruction note that asks us to report back to the AG and report back to National Treasury. And for National Treasury, they've made a provision on the contract management system for us to report back. So if we've deviated, they've given us approval, we've seen through, because sometimes they can give an approval, and things happen in the organization, you decide not to go through with it for one reason or another, and you can that transaction. So it doesn't come through in the contract management system, so you don't report it. So there's a formal platform on a monthly basis that supply chain management professionals go to report the transactions that they've effected, whether it be tenders, whether it be deviations, expansions, etc., as demanded for by in the supply chain management regulations and guidelines. So there is a formal way of closing the loop back with National Treasury and reporting.
All right. Last from my side, was a request on your part for an extension of a physical security and armed response services from Bitvest, Proticoin, Fidelity Security and Royal Security Services. Now, you said you are in the process of looking at doing what Comrade Kuno was talking about, insourcing, meaning you employ people fully as part of your establishment. And Treasury allowed you to extend until the 30th of April 2018, and that you advertise a tender for 12 to 24 months who has to finalize your processes. I just want to know where you are in this particular regard, what has finally happened.
Indeed, we got that two-year extension and we went through a tender process, which we've since adjudicated. We are currently at a feasibility study of the model, and so far we are seeing
You asked for 6 months and Treasury gave you 2 years.
So they gave us 6 months to extend whilst we went out on tender. So we went out on tender, we've since awarded that tender for a period of 2 years.
What was your initial request? Because the 2 years... Okay, what was your initial request?
So we had requested for 6 months.
In order to do what during that 6 months?
In order to kickstart a process to investigate the feasibility of insourcing. And we were understanding at that time that it may take longer than 6 months. And when we realized that it takes longer than 6 months, we then decided to go out on a tender so that we do a full financial impact of what that decision would take. So to go out on tender...
I'm interested more in the actual discussion or investigation around alternative means of securing physical security and armed response. Where are you in those investigations?
So, Chair, the issue of insourcing, as the CFO has indicated, we have been busy with feasibility studies. The initial findings that were tabled at my executive was that it would cost us, if I recall correctly, the figure of, was it in excess of 200 million more to do than what we have in terms of the contracted out cost as we have it today. That has to do with allocation, the requirements with regards to three shifts. You've got to have three shifts worth of staff on available in your employment. It would have increased our employment, if I recall correctly, by about 2,000 people across all our sites. I think that was the number that was tabled. At this point in time, we do not have the financial resources to consider that further. We are looking what other opportunities are, and our teams are looking at that further, whether there's any options.
Help me with the logic of that analysis. So you get SFISO to provide you with the security to guard this office, and you pay him. He pays them, he makes a profit. You take these same security guards and you employ them at SARS. Then they cost you double, triple, quadruple that amount. Balance me.
So I'll explain a few things. So there is a capital portion. So because you need to get vehicles in to patrol, you need to get firearms in because some sites require that. You need to create control rooms nationally to facilitate. At this point in time, you're leveraging office service providers' resources. As I said, as the acting commissioner said, there is addition. So these overhead type costs are borne by the service provider for now. You need initially to create that overhead structure and bring it into the organization. So initially it's going to cost you the amount. The second issue is, as far as we've got a grading structure, so when you bring in these colleagues, to not create labor issues, you need to bring them to what you've allowed to be your minimum grade, pay grade, which means you're not bringing them like for like.
No, it's fine. Let's I was just teasing it out. Because clearly it's an ideological course. It just does not make sense. And I don't think that we can be creative around those issues. I understand it's an issue beyond and bigger than SARS. I was just interested in finding out where you are on that matter.
Except that, Chair, we should say that as an organization, when this discussion started, and our position had been that we would want to insource. That's what the organization's position has been. And then we then said, let us go and investigate what that means. And with the subsequent issues of cuts that had then come in, we then had to quite carefully think what it means in respect of bringing the people in.
Why I wanted us to stop. You say you carefully thought. I don't think so. I don't think the careful part should come in. I don't think so. That's why I'm saying, for me, it's an ideological question. We can discuss this for a long, long time. You carefully thought. I can think carefully and come to a different conclusion. So, let's leave it. So I'm saying it's bigger than SARS. It is a broader question within the public service that she had raised, and which I also believe in, that there are much, much better ways, more creative ways to deal with the challenges that we have. Of all these services, cleaning, security, this, that,
We have Bitvest. Bitvest is cleaning our toilets. When you visit our toilets, it's Bitvest that's cleaning them. And I'm sure Parliament carefully thought about this and realized, you know what, this is the most cost-effective way of doing it. So, but anyway, it's fine. In terms of the current processes, if that's where you are, it's okay. I just wanted to be certain. Let us thank you very much for this very unusual engagement, which ends even before 12 o'clock. I'm really perturbed by my colleagues here, but happy that we're able to clear things seamlessly. SARS is not very far from being on our side. As I was indicating to the acting commissioner, some of the issues that we pick up from the AG around people getting contracts without tax clearance certificates, how do we link up with you, you know, in terms of people who have already got the money, meaning that they will definitely be something they owe SARS. How do we work around that and create a process of engagement so that when we pick these things up, we're able to say, look, there is something to follow up, and it is followed up. Yesterday, you were going on around the best candidate to start a lifestyle audit. We're dealing with water affairs. Everybody has been talking about lifestyle audits, but they never come. I'm not sure whether you're the correct institution, but as part of those things that will assist in combating and dissuading people from engaging in all manner of wrong things with public money. So we that's why I'm saying you have one foot on the accused side and one foot on the witness side. who should be assisting us in, you know, in the work that we do. But we want to thank you very much for this engagement and this clarification. Acting Commissioner.
Chair, I think it's just appropriate that I address the bursary issue, which we just in the sway of things forgot. 21.7 million is the current budget allocation, just to give that figure. And then also just on behalf of myself and my colleagues to thank you.
Thanks very much, comrades. We are we meeting here? We're meeting here again at 2 o'clock with Public Works. Thanks very much. Thank you.